Shut up and sit down.
Hey there and welcome to the Third Period Podcast, the show that takes you around the UK ice hockey leagues. Sponsored by Nuola for all your custom sportswear needs.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Third Period Podcast. Tonight we have Ross in the cave. Ross, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Fantastic. Ash, how are you?
Very good, thank you, Danny. And how about yourself?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you. Let's get forward and introduce tonight's guest with us. So, tonight's guest played a season with our favourite team, the Coventry Blaze, moved on to pastures new with Sheffield Steelers the following season, and has recently headed north into Scotland and continued with his last 2 years with the Dundee Stars, icing with former Blaze defensiveman Sean Boutin in the same time. We welcome Matt Marquardt to the pod. Matt, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you guys?
Yeah, coping with the lockdown, which is never good. So we'll always start with the cliche question, and that is, where did ice hockey first start for yourself?
I started skating probably 3 or 4 years old. Where I'm from, it's very cold. There's plenty of ice to go around, even if it's not in the arenas. So started skating 3, 4 years old. And then got into organized hockey around five, just mites or hockey for beginners, things like that. And then, it's been almost 30 years.
Wow. That's a good number of years.
Looking at the early days then, after you first started playing the game, you're playing in the Great North Midget League. How would you describe that to us Brits? Because I'll be honest, I've never heard of it until we looked at the stats and stuff today.
So the midget ranks is, the way it kind of happened for me, it was a little bit different because I was actually born the year that they had skipped. I don't know if you guys know the way like the OHL draft works, things like that. For over here, usually get drafted around 14, 15 years old. And it previously was a bantam draft. And that year they brought all the 14, 15 year olds into basically the U17 was the midget ranks. And the Great North Midget League is the like major midget. So basically a U17 program that a lot of the, if you were an underage player like myself, that would have been your draft year into the OHL as an underage player. So that year they ended up having 15, 16, 17 years olds in the league. And unfortunately I wasn't picked for that team and ended up a call up halfway through the season. So that's how I ended up playing for the North Bay Trappers and Great North Midget League.
Makes sense now, then. Now we've touched on a bit more, but following from there, moved on to the OPJHL with the Huntsville Wildcats, the CJHL with Brockville Braves, and then finally eventually find yourself playing for the Moncton Wildcats in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League before being drafted by the Blue Jackets in 2006. So the NHL draft, what was it like for yourself? It seems unreal from this side of the pond. Very well, tons of quality players, and it's just fighting to see who gets picked. What's it like on the playing side?
It was unbelievable for me. I think, going back to that season in the Great North Midget League, I thought it was the be-all, end-all being cut from that team and actually quit playing hockey for a while. And, the OHL is basically the be all end all in a way. Sometimes that's kind of the mentality is just, if you want to play pro hockey one day, the OHL was the route. And, college hockey and junior A, which was the OPJHL and the CJHL, those weren't necessarily the fast tracks to the pros like the OHL was. And I wasn't picked 3 consecutive years in the OHL draft. And then, going to play that first year in Huntsville was basically the year after I got cut from the midget program. They wanted me to come back and be one of their big big guns there, and I ended up just making a junior team on an invite tryout, just a letter in the mail, come to training camp, and ended up making the team straight out of camp. And things kind of escalated there for me. Every year I seemed to jump to the next level, and had a lot of OHL teams trying to knock my door down and go play there. But I just thought, with the Quebec Major Junior League hosting the Memorial Cup that year, which is basically the national championship for junior hockey, and all eyes would be on that. The team I selected to go play for, Moncton, was hosting the tournament that year. We had former NHL Coach of the Year, Ted Nolan, was our head coach. Things kind of went real quick for me over the course of a year and a half, 2 years, and ended up on a championship team with Brad Marchand, Keith Yandel, Andrew McDonald, the list goes on. Many guys on the team played in the NHL, and had a very good rookie season and ended up getting drafted to the NHL. So after, 2.5, 3 years before being cut from a U16 program, U17 program, to getting drafted to the NHL was quite the experience, and something I'm very proud of, and it was a great day for myself and my family. And it's nice now looking back, like at near the back nine of my career, and just kind of helping young kids out that the OHL draft or not getting drafted or being drafted doesn't really mean anything. It's just about sticking to it, and now more than ever with social media, teams will find you if you're good enough, and just to stick with it. So quite the whirlwind experience, but now I'm a 13, 14 year pro, and it's pretty incredible to look back and think on.
I mean, that escalated pretty quickly, and then you get to play with them stud players that you've just mentioned. It's fantastic. But what I want to know is, you were drafted by the Blue Jackets, but you played for the Providence Bruins in 08-09. How did that come about?
So after the draft, so just to give almost an example, Liam Kirk, who I've played with, he was drafted to Arizona. And so the same situation happened to me, except for I was drafted a year after my draft year. So after a team selects you, if you're playing junior, which he is in Peterborough, they have 2 years to sign you, to retain your rights, and you sign an NHL contract. In my situation, I had played out my 2 years. The contract talks didn't go the way we had hoped with Columbus, and my rights were then traded to the Boston Bruins. And then I ended up signing my entry-level contract with the Bruins before my time clock was expired, so to speak, a day before. It's basically the 11th hour, so it was nice. And my situation being drafted as an 18-year-old, my clock expired at 20, but if I didn't sign, I had nowhere to play because you're done playing junior at 20. So in Liam's case, this is a terrible coincidence or a terrible, timing with how it's going, but hopefully he signs with Arizona and things go well. But if you were to not sign this off season or going into next season, then he would re-enter the draft. So it's just, that's kind of the way the process works, and just trying to make a little bit of an example of how that can work. And that's how I ended up with Providence, was I ended up signing my entry-level contract with the Boston Bruins and not the Columbus Blue Jackets.
That's crazy. It's mad how you can go from best time of your life getting that NHL pick. You've got 2 years then to prove your worth, like you say. You've mentioned Liam there. We haven't put this in, if I'm honest. I'll pick it in now. Do you keep in regular contact with him? Do you give him some like hints and tips on what to do?
We've kept in touch very, not a ton. I know he's busy, I'm busy, things like that. But we have, I reached out to him when he was drafted. Mm. And, a lot of people that I knew on this side of the pond were basically all over me about him before he got drafted, and especially getting drafted to Peterborough in the CHL import draft.
Yeah.
There's a few people that I know that are involved with OHL teams and WHL teams that had called me and asked, what's he like? What kind of kid is he? What, describe his game. So, I was really, really proud of him. Liam's a great kid, works really hard, mature beyond his years. I think that's why he's had such great success at the OHL level. Is he's played with men for a very long time.
Yeah,
he knows what it's like to be a professional. He's practiced with us. You know, sometimes they might not get a lot of the time in games, especially at his age. He was only 16, but man, he didn't complain about it. He was very professional about it, that he knew he would get better if he was on the ice with us every day and his time would come. And he's done a great job with the Peterborough Petes. It's not an easy transition to go from, you know, it's tough for North Americans to go play the European game, even though like the UK style kind of complements our game. But, you know, going the other way in junior, sometimes it could be a lot different when, you know, at his age, when he was 16, there's a lot of other 16-year-olds that are really good too, that, you know, he might not have seen on this side playing with men, but I think it served him well. You know, having played the professional game before even playing juniors, which is wild where we come from to think about, but no, it's great.
Yeah.
We throw the odd text or, you know, Snapchat or Twitter message, but, you know, I'm sure he's busy now playing in Sweden.
Oh yeah. But he is. We'll bring it back to yourself then. So in your second season with the Providence Bruins, you managed to play 42 games for them. But in that same time, managed 4 games with Springfield Falcons in the AHL. Was that a trade there?
I was traded. Obviously, in Canada or North America, the NHL trade deadline is a big, big deal, and it's on TV for 9 hours a day, and people take off work to watch it because it's pretty exciting to sit there and watch, you know, what's going on. And that day I just happened to be the first trade of the day and went across the TV and I'd read it. And as I read it, I went, oh boy, my phone rang and I answered it. And it was, Boston just letting me know that they had traded me. And before I'd even kind of come to, I didn't even ask what team it was. I had no idea. And then it ended up being the Edmonton Oilers, who were affiliated with the Springfield Falcons. And, so I got traded there, right at the trade deadline. In my second season, so halfway through my entry-level contract, I became a part of the Oilers organization.
So when that trade happens then, and obviously it got, because by the sounds of it, you're not consulted, it's kind of done and then you're given the heads up afterwards. Do you ever think to yourself, I've really got to make the most of what I've got, because at any moment it could just be snatched away from me? Is there that moment of uncertainty with a
program? Sure. I mean, looking back, I was young. You think you know more than you do, and things weren't quite working out in Providence. I had really good rapports with general managers and management with the Boston Bruins. But down in Providence, you know, it's tough for a young guy sometimes, especially, you know, like we talked about, everything kind of went really quick for me. And then when I hit the pro level, I thought I adjusted well physically. I enjoyed, you know, I was just as big and as strong as a lot of guys, and that part didn't bother me, but just kind of readapting to a role. You know, I was a big time scorer my last 2 years of junior, and then you got to work really hard to kind of prove yourself. And sometimes just the opportunity wasn't there. I mean, like they ended up winning the Stanley Cup that same year I was traded. So you could tell the depth within the organization. And, you know, 3 years, when you think about it, isn't a big amount of time to, I just thought maybe a fresh start somewhere else, would have helped me halfway through my contract. And, I just went to an organization that, you know, I went from a team that ended up winning the Stanley Cup to a team that finished dead last and had been, you know, 4 first overall picks the next 5 years. And the only way to get first overall picks is to be at the bottom of the barrel. And, you know, there's a lot of changes within the brass and things like that, with the Oilers. So, although it was a fresh start, it wasn't great the end of that second year, just cause there was a lot of shuffling. And by the end of it, you're in the last year, your contract, and it's a contract year. And it just they tried to be really, really good their first year. And when you're trying to be really good at the AHL level, there's a ton of guys. And again, it was just, kind of a victim of circumstance a little bit. And and then before you know it, your entry level deal's over. But eventually I ended up working my way back up to the AHL level as well.
Yeah, moving on from that end of the 3-year NHL draft. You're back in the AHL with Oklahoma City Barons before a season in the East Coast with Bakersfield. And then you found your first stint in Florida, where you went on to win the Kelly Cup. What a feeling that must be. Because from this side of the pond, you hear about it being a prestigious trophy, and then you're lifting it.
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously I was fortunate enough to win a championship in junior. And anytime you, junior hockey is huge in Canada. It's, you know, it's crazy the way, just a, not the pressure, but the energy and the popularity of, you know, U20 sports here in Canada, most, more specifically hockey. And you kind of get the taste for winning, and that's all you want to do. So I was fortunate enough, even at the start of my pro career, to go pretty deep in the playoffs with some of the teams I'd played for. And going into that year after my entry level, I felt I had a lot to prove. Signed on in Bakersfield, which was a great spot, but unfortunately they were a team that didn't have an NHL affiliate and was kind of tough to attract players to sign there. But I had a good friend and a former teammate that was involved in the organization. It was his first year coaching and wanted to have somebody he was familiar with. And as I was playing for them, teams that were looking to, you know, make a splash in the playoffs, because the year before when I finished in Stockton, we had a really good playoff. And I kind of had a bit of a, I don't know how I want to say this, but I played really well in the playoffs, and you know, teams were looking for guys to boost their rosters going into the playoffs. And Florida was one of those teams, and we had a chat, and he didn't want to let me go. But unfortunately, the way things were going in Bakersfield, he had to make a move, and I was traded to Florida. And it was a, you know, it was the best thing to happen in my career at the time, was just getting an opportunity to play on a championship team and assume a little bit more of a leadership role as a professional. And, you know, we ended up winning the Kelly Cup, like you said, and it was an absolutely amazing moment with a great group of guys who I still keep in touch with today. And then ever since that moment on, I really, you know, relished and enjoyed the leadership side of things. And you really learned about, in a championship season, you really learn about what the culture in the dressing room can do, and just the winning mindset and a winning attitude, and surrounding yourself with those kind of people. And, you know, that's the way I've kind of adapted since that championship year, is just to try and be one of the parts of the leadership group that, you know, changes the culture and the attitude within the locker room. And yeah, I ended up staying in Florida for about 4 years after that. And then going back up to, 4 years over the course of maybe 5 or 6, up and down with the American League.
Just discussing, going back slightly in your time with Charlotte, with the Charlotte Checkers, am I right in thinking you won Man of the Year award for them, or Checkers Man of the Season?
Yep, I won the Man of the Year award for humanitarian work and community involvement. That's probably one of the proudest moments of my career. You know, I really enjoy every city I've ever played in. You know, it's quite a thing when you think about it, to go to somebody's home or go to somebody's hometown and them kind of adopt you as one of their own. And I've always really, you know, cherished that and never took it for granted. And that's just things that I don't find it's a very big ask to give back a little bit, whether it's, you know, going to schools or going to hospitals or just helping out organizations or just mingling with the people of the city that I'm playing in. And, you know, it's obviously not for the awards or the accolades, but, you know, it was very, very humbling to receive an award like that in the American Hockey League.
Obviously discussing on that. Obviously you've mentioned that you left Florida, went to Dal 2 for a little stint, then came back to Florida. And then you were given the A in 14-15 before becoming the captain in, 15-16, your final season there. Obviously, the Man of the Year award you've received, showing the way you are as a person, a player, has that had an impact on you being given the C in such a prestigious league and with a big organization?
Well, I think at the professional level, most teams and most situations are really leadership by committee, and guys lead in different ways, because if you're going to make it out of the U20s to pro, you got to have some type of leadership quality in you, or, you know, a reason for people to acquire your services as a professional. No, but I just kind of always tried to relate to the people I work with and have relationships with them. And you don't need a letter on your jersey to make you a good person or, you know, a good teammate or a good friend. I mean, now more than ever, you know, I'm happy to see that hockey's become a little bit more of a, as much as it is a, you know, a macho sport, now you can actually speak on things and let people know how you're feeling. You know, looking back at the start of my career, that's one of the things now is just, I like to be a bit of a sounding board for the younger guys. I think just because when I was a rookie, it was like, you never felt very many times that, you know, there was open door policies with coaches and older players. Sometimes not that they didn't have a closed minded or closed door relationship with young guys, but you didn't know that it was available or people would be open to it. So I think that might be a bit of a part of it too, is that, you know, you let people know that you're there no matter what, and on or off the ice to talk about something or bounce ideas off you, or, you know, what can I do to be better? And yeah, I think hockey players as people, they're all great leaders, and you know, there's not many hockey guys over the course of my career anyways that have been fortunate to make good friends, and I've never met, you know, really bad hockey players in terms of a person. I think that's something we should be really proud of as a sport, is you know, there's, again, like all the guys I've met in the game, I owe a lot to the game for the people I've met, the places I've been, and, you know, it's great. There's great people in this game.
Good to hear, Matt. So you mentioned obviously people you've met along your journey, and that kind of leads into what we've got here. So after your second stint with Florida, call comes in, Coventry Blaze, obviously we all support them, offer you a deal to come over to the UK. How does that deal kind of come about? Because obviously you mentioned obviously you've met people along the way. We know of Matthew Waugh, if that's how you say his name, I always say it wrong. He was at Sheffield. Do you reach out to him and say, what's the league like? Or does he kind of play that towards you and say, look, there's a team here that I think you could play for? How does that kind of deal come about if you've never played?
Yeah, I think nowadays players make best agents, and especially in a league like the UK or a lot of European countries and European hockey. It's not like North America, where North American scouts will go scout European players. Mm. It doesn't go the other way very much. I'm sure there is some scouting to a degree, but for the most part, especially in the UK, a lot of it comes by reference, and it's basically character references with players, or the hockey community is freakishly small, even though there's a ton of teams and a ton of players. I could ask any single player where they played or where they're from and probably name a guy that they know, and then that's where the relationship kind of jumps. You talk to a guy, oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Coventry. Oh, well, I played there and I know this guy. Oh, wow. And then that's any locker room you go into, within a couple of weeks, everybody knows each other through, might not be somebody other people know, but everybody's got that one link. And that's basically the way hockey works. And that's how, you know, I ended up over in the UK. I had some friends and known some other players that had come to the league. And obviously a big thing for me, I had a really good spot in Florida and I loved it and I didn't want to let it go. And, but then I was 29 years old and I had the opportunity to, do my schooling, which I think is a huge benefit to the UK league. And I've done interviews, I've done other things to kind of try and boost the league, because it's something, you know, I can't stress how valuable it is to, well, for my career, speaking from my experience, I've just loved the game so much more now, not having to worry about, everybody's got to worry about life after sport or life after hockey, but just the thought of having, you know, a degree, something that I thought I had kind of sacrificed earlier in my career to become a professional, you put off the regular life, going to college and getting a degree and, you know, becoming a professional, and your professional life is this small when it comes to hockey, and the rest of your life is a big chunk. And I just thought, you know what, I've played a long time in North America. I still love playing it, and I still wanted to play, and had the opportunity to do both at the same time, which was very difficult, but I'm so happy that I did it. And Coventry was just a great spot. And I had, I'd kind of started talking to teams on my own. I hadn't had an agent in a while. And I just thought the best part or the best way would be to network a little bit. And I started talking to some teams around the league just about, you know, 'cause I knew the scholarship, opportunities that the year I came in was maybe one or two per team. So I was trying to find a spot that had one available. And actually somebody that I was a really good friend of mine who was, you know, a little bit of a, if I were to compare, he'd be like a Jonathan Phillips. He, a guy that played in Florida for a long time, met his wife there, retired there, but he was always around the dressing room and kind of kicking about with the guys, or like a Jason Hewitt, guy that was always in Sheffield during my time there. Some of the fans could really relate to, and he played hockey with Danny Stewart.
Oh, right.
So that's kind of how I ended up linking up with Danny, and Coventry was my friend Ernie in Florida, had played college with Danny.
Oh, wow.
And then the conversation, so Danny and I started to build a relationship over the phone and start talking about, you know, the possibilities and of me coming there and the team he was building. And I was, you know, excited with some of the players that I'd known. And I was very excited to get there. And I really, really enjoyed my time there. And I was initially going to do it for 1 year and come back to North America, but I loved the game and the culture and the atmosphere in the UK. Like, I think the more players kind of see what the total package is like in the UK, and you're seeing it now, more NHLers, more than ever. It's not just lockouts that NHL guys are coming over here anymore. It's, you know, every year there's a new player that has an extensive resume or a long career in the NHL. And it's great for the league and the way the teams have conducted themselves and have played at the Champions League level. I mean, I could really see this league jumping off, and that's why I've really stayed this long, and every year it's gotten better. So you want to be a part of the growth of the league, and
yeah,
be proud of my career in the UK.
No, that's it's good to hear. Obviously the league's obviously had a good impression on you, because we've spoken obviously to other players and people like off screen as well, some fans, and we don't understand how the league is seen from you, from players' perspective, but to hear it from yourself and you saying obviously the league is really good and you get that good atmosphere, but you also get the intensity of a good game. So you mentioned obviously your time in Coventry, you enjoyed it. Us as fans started really well. We enjoyed ourselves, but unfortunately missing out on the playoffs. What's the dressing room like after finding out that that's it, playoffs are not happening?
It's brutal. Like I told you, you know, I've won at different levels. That's my benchmark every year. I don't expect anything less. I hate losing. So anytime, you know, again, I've won championships, played in championship games, been on the wrong end of championship games, but at the same time, it's what you play for. You know, as much as I love the game, I think I hate losing more than I love the game. But that's definitely, you know, the side of it that isn't enjoyable. But at the same time, that one really hurt. I think we had such a good team, and it was just such a weird, like the first 3 years I played in the league, there were three different formats of the way things broke down, right? And, you know, the way we had almost snuck into the playoffs, I think it was 9 of our last 11 games were against Sheffield, Belfast, or Cardiff. So, I mean, we had it in tough, and you know, playing teams at the time like Glasgow, Fife, like teams that were making it in that we'd beat, you know, 7 out of 8 times.
Yeah.
It was just tough the way the division was set up. So that was very difficult. And then, you know, going to Sheffield the next year, they had the three divisions, and our division was, you know, Cardiff, Nottingham, Belfast, and the top four teams in one division. And then it was funny seeing things just like the top scorers of the league was so funny, because every night it was a 2-1 overtime win in our division, and then a 9-7 shoot 9-8 shootout between, you know, Milton Keynes and Guildford. So, yeah. But it's at the same time, that's what's made it exciting. I mean, 3 of the 4 years I was in the league was a different format. So it's something new. It's something, you know, I really like this new open league with 1 through 10 or 11 of the first year they did it. And it's been awesome, but circling back around, yeah, I hate not making the playoffs.
So you touched upon it there as well, Matt. You obviously come to the end of that season. Sheffield is a deal that comes up on the table, with former head coach for the Coventry Blaze, Paul Thompson, being there. Was Sheffield a destination that had crossed your mind previously, or was it at that moment when Tomo reaches out to you and goes, I've got a deal for you here? Was that when it kind of comes about and you think, you know what, Sheffield, big team, let's go for it? Or was there kind of like talk in the background, you know, oh, Sheffield would be a good option, let's put the feelers out there? Like you mentioned earlier, you always have to put the feelers up.
Yeah, well, the first team that I'd ever spoken to was Sheffield. Just Wazzy had gone over and we're best buddies, and we had talked, you know, like the whole season, you know, how's your season, how are things? And obviously me watching from afar saying like, wow, like he was lighting the league up, he was winning championships. And I was like, man, that's exciting. And he was the captain when we won in Florida. So, you know, those are the type of people and the type of atmospheres and clubs you want to be a part of. And I'd had a long talk with Tomo actually before I'd come to Coventry, you know, just about, you know, obviously reconnecting with Wazzy. And unfortunately at that time they didn't have any schooling opportunities available. And that was a big part of things for me. I just thought that, you know, if I was going to make the move and leave Florida, a place that I had really, you know, grown fond of and made a second home, you know, now in the East Coast League and in pro, kind of the second lockout really kind of screwed over some guys like me, where they put in a veteran rule where a certain amount of games would classify as a veteran. And in Florida, like you can only have 4. So I'd had that spot in Florida for a long time. And if you give it up, not a lot of guys are going to, you know, give it back anyways, even a year later. So I knew that if I was going to leave Florida, it was going to be for school and to, you know, get my education and keep playing and then kind of reassess from there. And at the time there was no option in Sheffield, and played a season in Coventry and went to school. And then the next year, I think a few guys had left Sheffield and more so, you know, left wingers, scoring left wingers, and they wanted to add some size. And at the end of that season, you know, started talking with Sheffield. And then, after the season, the way things went in Coventry, a lot of guys didn't end up re-signing. And when I was informed that they were going to go a different direction, and I started, you know, the conversation opened up with Sheffield and moved on there.
Oh, fair. That's a fair and honest answer. And, you know, it's at least they were honest with you and said, look, we are looking to try something different next season. Yeah. It meant you could get your kind of house in order and move on. The one thing I did want to ask about Sheffield with your time there, there seemed to be a ritual after you won a game, and a player, I don't know which player it was, would have to do some sort of weird, funny lap of the rink and then a dance. What was that all about?
They call it the Eddie, because Colin Eddie, I never played with him. No. But I think it started because he had gotten to the team and somebody had told him as a joke. And I don't know if it was, you know, Davey Phillips or John or somebody had just said like, hey man, when you win here and you get star of the game, like you got to dance in front of the whole crowd. And he ate it up, I guess, and thought it was a real thing. And then it just kind of took off, that guys just thought it was hilarious that this guy would fall for that. And then they made it a, a ritual, and now it's known as the Eddie.
As the Eddie. Oh, fair enough.
That's what I was told anyway.
They could be having a new one for, you know.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
You had a good season in Sheffield. You got 40 points in 53 games. The fans seemed to enjoy having you there. What was the reason not to return to Sheffield?
I don't know. I thought I played really well. Sheffield's obviously a tough place to play in terms of, again, it's a destination, and they're very competitive, and that was a bit of a weird one. I thought, I really wanted to be on a winning team again, and again, trying to be a good teammate, and assumed whatever role they gave me. And there was times when it wasn't a very, top line role, or maybe just play a secondary role, which I was okay with. And I ended up producing pretty well, even though I didn't have the opportunities I was hoping to have. But, I ended up getting some stints during the year where, due to injuries or things like that, I got to, play a little bit bigger role, and thought I adjusted well. Thought I played really well in the international competitions, in the Continental Cup. And just one of those things. And I'd heard it before, and I understand the business of hockey as well. And again, they just decided to go in another direction. And that's basically all I can say about it, really. I was kind of taken by surprise, but hey, that's hockey, and that's the way it goes sometimes.
Well, that's the thing in every walk of life. One door closes, never opens, and that opening door was Dundee. And you went there in 2018-19. We spoke with Sean Boutin the other week, and he mentioned that you two were a package deal. Wherever he goes, yes, you end up there, and vice versa. Did he have any involvement with getting you up to Dundee?
Well, he just mentioned that he'd spoken with Omar Pasha, and that was one of the teams originally, Manchester, when I was speaking to Coventry. They had a school package available too, so I'd had a little bit of a relationship with Omar and chatted with him. And sometimes after games, when I played for Coventry and with Sheffield, we'd catch up. We had a lot of mutual friends, and just shoot the breeze, not necessarily about hockey, just about life. And we became kind of good friends. And he was talking to Boots, and Boots, he was interested in going there. And then I had a long talk with Omar, and then the first year we had Francois Bouchard, who was a really good friend of mine in junior, and the opportunity to play with him again, he's a second round pick to Washington, hell of a hockey player. And they started to bring in some pieces. They kept Brian Hart around, a guy that I thought was a real good, effective player, big, strong guy. They started bringing in some pieces that kind of piqued my interest. And Omar had mentioned he wanted a little bit of help on the culture side of things with trying to rebuild, an organization that had been kind of hurting a little bit over the last couple of years. And he kind of came in and inherited some not bad players, but just that he came in, I think, a week and a half before the season started with players somebody else had recruited. It was just tough. And then they started kind of leaving with the whole, Mark Lefebvre, getting a job right before the season started. Some of the players he'd recruited didn't feel comfortable going there if Mark wasn't going to be there. And so Omar had a tough time, I think, getting guys to come down and stay on. And I think that kind of carried through the year. So it was his first year of really making something his own and turning things around in Dundee. And, at the point of my career, I was really excited about, him offering me the player assistant coach position, something I thought would be really kind of fit my personality and my style of play. And it's helped. I enjoyed both seasons I played with Dundee. I thought were great for me just because having that title or that responsibility, I really felt like can't be a hypocrite. You have to, you really self-assess your game, because you can't be a player assistant and expect somebody to do something you're not going to do. Not that I didn't do those things or whatever. It really helped me in seeing hockey from another side of things, not only the business or the behind the scenes stuff in the business of hockey, but even just the way I saw the game. It wasn't just about, you know, oh, I'm going to, you know, make my line better, or I got to have a good game tonight. It was seeing things from, you know, as a coach, but also playing, and just an opportunity I really, really enjoyed. And you know, it's tough that this year in the UK and the pandemic and things, there's a lot of hockey that's at a standstill right now. But yeah, no, really enjoyed the opportunity. And that's kind of how it came about. Sean's another guy. Sean Boutin's a good, great leader. Another guy you want to surround yourself with because he brings it every night, and great guy in the locker room, and a real glue guy. And those are the type of people that Omar was trying to bring into Dundee. So it was a no-brainer.
Well, saying about obviously you're on the coaching side and doing both elements, a future Blaze player was with you in that first season in Dundee, and Charlie Corcoran. Did he reach out to you when he came to Coventry to get the vibe of the city and the place? Or
yeah, I had some conversations with Chucky. He'd originally signed in France, I believe, and there's a team that went under or something like that. And yeah, he'd reached out to me, and you know, as much as you love to have a player like Chucky back, you know, I'd never lie to anybody about things. And I just told him that my experience there was awesome. You know, I met some great people and really enjoyed playing for Danny. Danny's a demanding guy, but he's an honest guy and a fair guy. And I love playing for Danny, and you know, everyone at the Blaze was great. And even now I've been a visitor more than I've actually been on the Blaze, but every time I'm there, I still talk to everyone at the rink, whether it's, you know, the ticket ushers or you know, Scott taking photos, and you know, seeing Mike Cowley and everyone. It's just great. I still enjoy, you know, coming back to the Skydome, even though, you know, I'm there to win. It's nice that people have always kind of kept it between the buzzers and outside the game and outside there. I don't care what's said about me when I'm on the ice, but you know, after, I've always kind of still have some really great friends there. Yeah, it was a great experience for me. So when Chucky asked me how it was, like I said, as much as we wanted him back in Dundee, I wasn't going to put Coventry down just because, you know, it was a great place to play and I had a great experience there. So I had nothing but good things to say to him.
Obviously, you mentioned there about the pandemic as well, cutting this season short. Yourself and the Stars, you were teetering on the playoffs. I think you were in ninth as the season was cut. Big question, were you making the playoffs?
Yeah. Simple answer, yes. No, I thought, you know, we had a great team. And again, part of the attraction for me to be in Dundee was just to work with young guys or new pros, or you know, guys like Dryden Dow, who was a second year pro and was an assistant captain, you know, like that says a lot about him as a person and what he had done with his opportunity coming out of Canadian University to grow into, you know, a really big piece for us and kind of showing the way for the younger guys. I think the guys we had our first year and the guys we retained going into the second year and bringing those other guys along and having great, you know, British players too. I mean, just seeing where Chris Ingles had come from, you know, my first year in the league to last year being one of our, you know, one of our leaders in the locker room. And even though he wasn't a, you know, a North American or an import, you know, people leaned on him for advice, or, you know, it was a great team. And I think we were, you know, I mentioned early, just leadership by committee. We just had a great group of guys that loved playing for each other. And I think after we had some injury troubles, we had some things go on, we had some movements, we were in a team that make a lot of transactions, but you know, we made a change just before the holidays and really came on after Christmas. And I think, you know, we were right there. We were winning big games in places like Sheffield, you know, we had one blowout where we got beat bad against Cardiff, but we also beat them twice, I believe, or once, and should have won another one in Cardiff. So I think we had the right mix of players, and we had a good team, especially building up for a playoff run. And I think we would have surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, you're definitely on the roll, that's for sure. So, like we said, there's no season this year in the Elite League, but you've returned to the East Coast with the Jacksonville Icemen after the North Admirals pulled out of the season. What's happening with the East Coast?
Good question. No, things are kind of getting there now. Yeah, I'd originally signed with Norfolk and to kind of bring that back around, the new general manager of Norfolk was a guy that Wazzy and I had won with in Florida, a player that become general manager. So that was, he was trying to do the same thing basically as Dundee. He'd, you know, gotten a team that had a couple of tough seasons and needed a refresh and a rebuild. And I started helping him out, put a team together, and really excited about trying to turn things around in Norfolk. But obviously with the pandemic, the tough thing is it's different in every state, the way they're governed and what they're allowing at the moment. And even just the, you know, extremity of the cases or lack of cases kind of determines how things go. And the way the East Coast League's done it now is they split it into two phases. They got phase one, which is starting in December, which is where Jacksonville is. They're in a phase one team. And then phase two teams will be in the new year. So I was, again, like I touched on earlier, the veteran rule, Jacksonville was short a veteran, had some great talks with them and what they're expecting from the season and their goals. And I think they kind of aligned with mine and wanted to come in and have a really good season. And, you know, we're just hoping that things go smoothly. A lot of stuff's in place in terms of protocol to keep things safe. And that's the goal too, is just to get through the rest of this season safely and get to playing hockey. But so there's 12 or 13 teams, I believe, starting in December. So Jacksonville is one of them. And I was very fortunate to get a spot there and really looking forward to it. And like we said, it's unfortunate that the UK couldn't get off the ground, but you know, it's safety first. And you know, the US is a little bit bigger in terms of land mass. So it's, things were a little bit more spread out than in the UK, where it could go from tip to tip pretty quick if something were to break out. So hopefully things go well and guys respect the process and we can get a season going.
So the big question is, would you come back to the Elite League at all?
Absolutely. I mean, I've had nothing but great experiences in the Elite League. And like I said, it was supposed to just be a one-off for me. I was going to go for a year, get my education and come back to North America, and really fell in love with, you know, the style of play, the culture, the people, the everything really suited my game and my personality. And I've really enjoyed kind of the evolution of the roles I've had over the years there, and kind of made my rounds around the league a little bit, playing with different teams. But at the same time, it's been exciting, and you know, I just love talking to players about the possibility of them coming to the Elite League, because I can't speak saying enough good things about it, and it's on the rise, definitely. And I think, you know, sometimes as bad as situations like this are, or the way lockouts are in North America, I think fans and people come back, you know, tenfold after a situation like this, because they realize how much they really enjoyed it and how much they miss it. And as players, we all miss it. And I know how passionate the fans are in every Elite League club, and I'm sure they really miss it and I really feel for them. But you know, knowing how crazy they are about their hockey, I hope you know, we find a way to get this thing sorted and get back on track next season.
Oh, definitely, that's the thing, getting back on track now and getting some hockey back, because I for one am definitely missing being in the ice rink watching games. Yeah. One final question for me, and it's one we like to ask all, I guess, and we've had some answers from all over. It's been brilliant. From your playing career, from day one to day now, if you had to pick an all-time top six of one netminder, two D-men, and three forwards who you've played alongside, what would be your all-time six?
It as a professional or just in the Elite League?
Any way of your hockey life. So if you played when you were 6 years old or when you're 26.
Okay. All-time netminder that I played with was Tuukka Rask. Defense, Keith Yandel. Other defense, I would go with Johnny Boychuk. And then top three forwards, I'd go obviously Brad Marchand. Trying to think who else I'd put at forward. I played with some really good players. Been real lucky with some of the guys I got to play with. That's a good question. I've never thought about that before. And I'm just going off of who I played with in a season, because I played with some really good players at camp and things like that. I got two more to put. I'll put Matthew Waugh on there. He's got a lot of accolades, won a lot of championships. And I'll throw in Jordan Eberle. He's another guy.
Wow. Just a few studs in there then.
Yeah.
That is.
And then I'm on the bench.
Fair enough. That is some line. Yeah, that is some line. I've got one more question that I'm going to throw out there, and I think I'm going to include this going forward when we start doing guests. Obviously, I've played what's called rec hockey here in the UK, and there's a lot of banter, shall we say, between players. Obviously, you get that in the pros as well. So I'm going to explain it to the listeners. So a chirp is something that happens between players of oppositions or even on the same team, and it's kind of like your best line to wind someone up. What is the best chirp you've ever received from an opposition player?
Oh, man. There's some I can't say. I've heard a lot of, like, pretty good ones where this is directed at me.
Yeah, so best one you've ever been received, even if you've laughed at it and thought, that's good, I like that.
Well, the funny ones, and there's a couple where, like, when I played with Brad Marchand, guys would, like, turn their sticks around like that, or, like, talk about it, then just yell, like, oh, you're offside by a nose, Marchand. Those are always pretty funny.
Wow.
Best one I try and stay away and not get chirped too much, but...
It's a tricky one, isn't it, when you think about it?
It is a tricky one. You try and forget the times you got chirped and someone got you good.
It's good that it's got you, like, thinking about it. That's the good thing.
Oh, I can't think of something real good. I'll give you a story that where I got pretty good, and it was my first training camp with the Bruins. And before, they call them captain skates, where guys show up earlier and skate before training camp actually starts. So I had driven down to Boston with my girlfriend at the time. And so I was skating, and during the day, I'd just say, you know, come pick me up at this time. And so it's an empty arena, there's nobody there. And she walks in the rink, and she's the only person there. People can see you. And then I got off the ice, and in the dressing room around everyone, Sean Thornton, who's a real tough customer, and he came in swearing, who the girlfriend's in there, and blah, blah, blah. Who's blah, blah? And I was like, oh, man, I got to face music here. And I'm like, that was me, man. Sorry, never happened again. And he's flipping out, and he's throwing his equipment, and he's like, he is incensed. And I was like, oh, man, it's my first camp. Like, what? This is the worst first impression. And it was one of the first days of the captain skate, and we didn't even get to training camp yet. And he's losing his mind, and he comes right up to me, and he's seething. And then he just puts his arm around me and goes, I'm just kidding, man. Don't be so gullible. And, like, I was pissing myself. I was so scared. The toughest guy on the team comes right at me. And I think people knew what he was on about, but that was the worst I got had. But
wow,
I guess you could kind of turn that into a chirp.
Oh, wow.
Sorts.
That's amazing, that one. So that's everything I've got for you, Matt. Ross, have you got any more?
No, nothing from me.
Ash, anything from yourself?
Nothing more from me, thank you.
No problems. Well, thank you again, Matt, for joining us. We hope you have a good season this year in the East Coast. We hope it all goes well for you. And that's it for this week's episode, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Third Period Podcast. Hopefully we can all be back in an ice rink watching some live hockey soon. And hopefully Matt's with us in the UK again.
Right on. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Third Period Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you've got anything you want to say to us, find us on Facebook. Maybe join in the next episode. As always, check out Nuola for all your custom sportswear needs.